In their nest of blankets and straw, they lay in each other's embrace, and in halting sentences, Michael tried to explain new squadron orders to her. She could not fully comprehend their dreadful significance. She understood only that he was going into dire peril, and she held him with all her strength.
"But you will be there on our wedding day. Whatever happens, you will come to me on our wedding day?"
"Yes, Santin. I will be there."
"Swear it to me, Michel."
"I swear it."
"No, no! Swear the most dreadful oath you can think of."
"I swear it on my life and on my love for you."
"Ah, Michel."
She sighed and pressed against him, satisfied at last.
"I will watch for you as you fly by each dawn and each dusk, and I will meet you here each night."
They made love in a frenzy, a madness of the blood, as though they were trying to consume each other, and the fury of it left them exhausted, so that they slept in each other's arms until Santana woke, and it was late. The birds were calling in the forest, and the first light filtered into the barn.
"Michel! Michel, it is almost 4:30.
By the light of the lantern, she checked the gold watch pinned to her jacket. "Oh, my God!" Michael began pulling on his clothes, still groggy with sleep. "I'll miss the dawn patrol."
"No, not if you go directly."
"I can't leave you."
"Don't argue. Go, Michel, go, quickly."
Santin ran all the way, slipping and sliding in the mud of the lane, but determined to be on the hill for the squadron takeoff, to wave them away. At the stable, she stopped, panting and clutching her chest to try and control her breathing. The chateau was in darkness, lying like a sleeping beast in the dawn, and she felt a rush of relief. She crossed the yard slowly, giving herself time to catch her breath, and at the door she listened carefully before letting herself into the kitchen. She slipped off her muddy boots and placed them in the airing cupboard behind the stove. Then she climbed the stairs, keeping close to the wall, so that the tread would not squeak under her bare feet. With another lift of relief, she opened the door to her cell, crept in, and then closed it behind her. She turned to face the bed, and then froze with surprise as a match flared and was touched to a lantern wick, and the room bloomed with yellow light. Anna, who had just lit the lantern, was sitting on her bed with a shawl around her shoulders and a lace nightcap on her head. Her red face was stony and forbidding.
"Anna," Santin whispered, "I can explain. You haven't told Papa?"
Then the chair by the window creaked, and she turned to find her father sitting in it and staring at her with his single, malevolent eye. She had never seen such an expression on his face.
Anna spoke first. "My little baby, creeping out at night to go whoring after soldiers."
"He's not a soldier," Santin protested. "He is an airman."
"Harlotry," said the Comte. "A daughter of the House of de Thierry behaving like a common harlot."
"Papa, I am to be Michel's wife. We are as good as married to each other."
"Not until Saturday night, you are not."
The Comte rose to his feet. There was a dark smudge of sleeplessness under his one eye, and his thick mane of hair stood on end.
"Until Saturday," his voice rose to an angry bellow, "you are confined to this room, child. You will remain here until 1 hour before the ceremony begins."
"But, Papa, I have to go to the hill."
"Anna, take the key. I place you in charge of her. She is not to leave the house."
Santin stood in the centre of the room, looking around her, as though for escape. But Anna rose and took her wrist in a powerful, calloused hand, and Santan's shoulders slumped as she was led to the bed.